Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Flick Chicks podcast.
A podcast where we talk about movies and nothing else.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Jane.
You said the nothing else thing so aggressive that it like kind of went into me. So when I when I said my name, I was like, and I'm Allison.
And I just...
Bitch. Yeah, if you want to hear us talk about other stuff, you have to come support us on Patreon.
Yeah, we do talk about other stuff other than movies. Our first Patreon episode, we cover our childhood favorite television shows.
And it's long, and it's loud,
and it's funny.
Fun.
It is a good one. And so if you guys can spare a dollar or five, you can get some perks and some extra content.
So true, so true. So, just another reason for you to join Patreon. Today's our listener episode.
Yep.
And guess what? Some of you put in listener episodes a long time ago, but guess what? My boyfriend put one in yesterday, and we're doing it today. And you know why? Because he's a $10 patron, and yep. His choices get first pick.
It's true.
So if you're a $10 patron, not all the time, obviously, but if you're a $10 patron, you get to submit movie requests,
yep.
And they go to the top of our queue.
Yep.
So... That being said, Jane, what movie are we doing today?
We're doing Nocturnal Animals. It's a 2016 film directed by Tom Ford, starring Amy Adams, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Shannon, and this other guy who plays the bad guy, Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah. Yep, and Isla Fisher is in it, and this is the movie that taught me the difference between Isla Fisher and Amy Adams.
I think it's that movie for a lot of people.
It's like seeing them together, you go... They don't look that similar.
I see. I get it.
I see how they look different.
Yeah.
So Nocturnal Animals, it was not Jane's time. It's been a long day. It was not Jane's first time watching.
No, I had seen this when it came out, and I remembered enjoying it, but I didn't put it together because it's kind of a dense film.
But it's weird.
It's
you know?
Weird and like there's a
because it's not that dense. But when you're watching it, you're like, what's going on?
Exactly. It's kind of, I saw the word a lot, enigmatic a lot when describing this movie, which I kind of it's kind of an enigma. It's like, it's so weird. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before.
And it came from a fashion designer.
Isn't that wild?
His debut film. And he wrote it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's based on a book.
Yeah.
But
not loosely.
Loosely.
Yeah. I thought it. Oh, that was really good, especially for a fashion designer.
My brother got a callback for Phantom of the Opera.
That's awesome.
On Monday.
That's so good. I'm so excited for him.
I know. I texted him and I said, when did the castles come out? My brother auditioned for Phantom of the Opera. And he's really wants this certain part. And he's been taking voice lessons specifically so he can get the part. So...
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed he gets it. But even if he doesn't get it, he'll get something good.
He'll get a good role.
He's a senior. He's working hard.
He'll get a good role. He got the, he was the pimp in,
Les Mis?
In Les Mis. And who was he in Fiddler?
He was just a guy.
Oh, he was, but the pimp was like a supporting role, right? Like he got a song.
He got a solo, at least, yeah, in Lovely Ladies.
Yeah.
And he got to do fun stuff. He got to be drunk in the Master of the House
scene.
Ooh,
that's good.
He got conned. And then when he was in The Music Man Jr., he was the mayor.
Aww.
So you know that scene in Waiting for Guffman where he's like, I want to see you hooking them thumbs.
Yeah.
That's what I always felt, like, saw whenever he did the mayor, because that's what he did. But yeah, it was my first time watching Nocturnal Animals. And I got it. I think it, like, definitely reading through some stuff helped me kind of put together some stuff that I missed.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's pretty, like, once you start breaking it down, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
It's just, like, sometimes when you're just watching and you're not thinking, you're like...
It's a lot to take in initially.
Yes.
Like, initially, you're like, what? Like, as soon as the movie ends, you're like, what? And then kind of, like, ruminate on it and you're like, oh,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I got it.
Let's talk about that first scene.
Oh my gosh.
What? The first thing, I was like, this is so one of those movies.
It is.
The minute I saw it.
It is.
It's like, you know how we need to talk about Kevin has that beginning scene?
Yeah.
Where it's like.
It's like that.
It is so much like that.
It's so much like the beginning of that scene. So upsetting. Like, not upsetting, but like kind of disturbing.
It's not fun to watch.
No, it just kind of tries to make you uncomfortable. It's like the tomato scene. And we need to talk about Kevin. That's what it is like.
I felt bad watching it.
Yeah.
Even though I was like, I wouldn't have felt so bad if it had been short, but it was long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, minutes.
Yeah. It was a lot. So the beginning scenes are a bunch of elderly, obese women in marching shoes and hats.
And they're dancing.
And they're dancing completely naked.
Yeah, completely naked.
And it's a lot to take in. And it goes on for a long time.
It wouldn't be so bad if it did, if it ended.
Yeah.
But it never does.
Yeah.
And then, so basically the reason that's in there is because the main character played by Amy Adams, what's her name, Susan?
Susan.
Okay. So Susan, she is an art collector, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
She buys art for galleries.
Yeah, and puts like openings on and stuff like that.
She is not an artist herself.
No, because she doesn't have the creativity to be an artist.
Sure. That's what she thinks, yeah. Right? She's scared, basically, to be a real artist. So she, we find out that, like, she runs that. She's very wealthy. She's very, like, people listen to her.
Very successful in the art world.
And she's married to this guy.
Played by Armie Hammer.
Yeah, who is, like, running a business, but the business isn't doing very well. So she's basically like the breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like classic, he's cheating on her, obviously, with like hot women. And then she is in her house and she gets a package from this guy named Edward Sheffield.
Her ex-husband.
Yes, from a long time ago when she was in grad school.
19 years ago. They hadn't seen each other in 19 years.
So she's like 40.
Yeah.
And he is, like, they were, like, 20 when they were married, basically.
Yeah.
So, he was a novelist, and he sends her a novel that's dedicated to her called Nocturnal Animals.
Mm-hmm.
And while her husband is away on the weekend, basically cheating on her, she reads the novel.
And she becomes pretty obsessed with it and, like, just really captivated by this novel. And it's unlike anything he has ever written before.
Yeah.
And so
He
wasn't that good. And
but
then
this is really good.
This is, like, great. So the movie is really interesting because it goes between real life and the story.
Mm-hmm.
So you become really engrossed in the story, as Susan does as well.
Right. And everything's from her perspective.
Yes.
We never meet Edward as an adult. As Edward at all.
Yeah.
We see flashbacks. From her perspective.
And we know that Tony is like his idea of himself.
Yeah.
In the story.
It's like the story is like a metaphor for basically their relationship.
Yes.
Like everything. Like the... like how bad she hurt him when she left.
Yeah, and how so in the book, Isla Fisher plays his wife, and they are traveling somewhere in Texas.
Yeah,
and then they come across these really like boisterous young people, and they start like chasing them off the road, and then it gets more menacing and more menacing until the men take away
kidnap
his wife and child. And this is like a metaphor for how Armie Hammer came in and took Amy Adams away from him, and also she got an abortion, which killed his child.
And so he's also taken by one of the people. They leave him in a field. He's able to hide, but they killed his wife and daughter after they raped them.
Yep.
And so he's able to hide. He finds a cop. Cop helps him. They find the people who did it. At least two of the people. I think there was like four.
Yeah.
But they find at least two of them.
They find Lou and Ray.
They find the leader who like did it all, and they find the guy who drove him.
Yes.
So they find him after finding his wife and daughter. Isn't that scene where he's like, are they okay? Are they all right?
That's heartbreaking.
Isn't that so sad? Because she's so like clearly dead. They're both so clearly dead.
But he's,
and he's like, are they okay? Are they going to be okay? And he's like, no.
Yeah.
They're not.
It's heartbreaking.
They're dead. Like, they're dead. And there's, like, literally flies, like, all over.
Yeah.
And so the cop, like, basically what ends up happening is they don't have enough evidence to convict the guys because the guys won't confess.
Yeah.
And even though their fingerprints are everywhere, basically they're too nervous to do the case. So they say, like, we're not going to run the case until you have more evidence. But the cop who's on the case is dying of cancer.
And he's kind of a rogue.
Yeah, and so he's dying of cancer, so
he doesn't give a shit.
he knows that the case isn't going to be finished.
Yeah.
Because they're going to assign someone new to it, and he's not going to work on it. And they're basically just trying to shut the case because they don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, although I don't feel like that would ever happen. Especially not if two white women, like, got raped and killed.
True.
And you had fingerprints. Like, I don't believe that wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
But in terms of the book, it's not enough.
Yeah.
So, they decide that they're gonna, like, hunt them down and force them to confess.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, makes your confession completely not liable in court. So anything they actually get is then completely out because now they really can't go to court. So they basically decide to kill them.
But it kind of seems like Michael Shannon, the cop, seems to kind of know that they're going to kill him from the beginning.
Yeah, he realizes, like, he's basically like, do you want justice or do you want to do it, like, the right way?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want justice, basically? And a lot of it, I think, so... Obviously, it flashes back between, it goes from flashbacks of Susan and Edward getting together, and then it also goes to Susan as she is now, and then also the book. So there are three, like, tenses that you kind of go into.
Yeah, so, and what's interesting, too, is since everything is from Susan's perspective, I think that's why Edward is the main character
in
the thing, is because that's the way Susan sees him, and that's why Isla Fisher looks like her. I mean, it's no... accident that they cast Amy Adams and Isla Fisher,
who
so often get mistaken for each other.
Yeah, there's no coincidence.
And then she has a real daughter.
Yes.
Who's grown.
Yeah.
Who's, like, off living her own life, and she looks just like the daughter in the story.
Yeah.
And there's even a part where she gets scared and calls her daughter to make sure she's okay.
Yeah. It's
just the novel. And then...
So she starts really internalizing what's going on in the book.
Which I think Edward knew she would do.
Listen, I have thoughts on this, and we'll talk about them when I get to themes.
When
we talk about the end, we'll discuss it.
The ending is great.
It's great. It's so good, and I don't think people understand it, but, like, it's really good. Anyway, we'll talk about it later. so I think that a huge problem in... Edward and Susan's relationship was that Susan perceived Edward as being weak because he was sensitive, and that's, like, what drew her to him in the first place, was him being sweet and sensitive. But then, as her mother told her, you'll get tired of it.
Yeah, well, and especially when it got to the point where she was like, why can't you just succeed as a writer? Like, you're not a good writer. And also, like, she says to him at one point, like, you need to stop writing about yourself. Like, don't take this the wrong way, but stop writing about yourself. Yeah. And I think kind of what she means is, like, stop writing about a person who's struggling to become a writer.
Exactly, exactly.
And he takes that advice in a way, and he writes Nocturnal Animals, which is about him,
but it's also
different enough that it's up to you how much is it about him.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, obviously we see that it is about him because Jake Gyllenhaal plays both Edward and Tony.
Of course. Well, and also that's the unique perspective you get with Susan, is she can tell that it's about him.
Yeah.
But if you were just anybody.
Exactly.
You wouldn't be able to. You praise those actors and it's just suddenly like a normal novel.
Yeah. It's great. Oh, anyway. So I think that that's the idea of weakness and Tony feeling weak. Because the scene, first of all, I have two examples of, like, Tony's weakness, I guess, like that. How he feels about himself when he was with Susan, you know, because he knows that that's what she thinks of him.
Right.
Sorry, I'm gathering my thoughts. So the scene where they're first getting the girls into the car.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he freezes.
Yeah.
And he's just watching them and they're screaming help and he just, like,
can't.
Completely freezes. And there's, like, one where He keeps thinking about that, and later he, like, starts screaming, you know, why didn't I stop them? Why didn't I stop them?
Yeah, well, not only that, but the guys constantly are like, oh, who wears the pants in this family?
Yeah.
Like, not you. You're such a pussy. You're such a girl.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like, oh, you're going to let your wife fight for your daughter. You're not even going to, you know what I mean? Like, all that. You can't change a tire. You don't know how to change a tire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all those things that are, like, classic, like, and also it's like Texas bros.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, come on. What's, like, the more representation of.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the book really plays on, like, Edward's feelings of weakness when he was with Susan.
Mm-hmm.
And especially going through their breakup. Yeah. Because obviously the book is about their breakup in a way.
Well, and then also before he does kill Ray,
mm-hmm.
Ray's like, "You won't shoot me, you're too weak, you're too weak." Mm-hmm. And he literally says, "You're too weak," like three times.
Yeah, exactly.
And before he shoots him.
It's a little heavy-handed sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's not hiding the themes.
No. I mean, Red Couch when they're dead. Red Couch whenever she's complaining about how he writes about himself. Red shirt whenever he's Tony. Red hair.
Yeah, true. The revenge painting.
The revenge painting. It's a literal story about revenge. They spell it out.
I know. She goes, "Oh, that's a cool painting." Literally says,
revenge.
I wonder what the theme is.
I wonder what it is.
Yeah, it's a... They definitely play, like, on his... That was, like, a big thing for him. And that's, like, kind of the reason she left.
Yeah.
Because she says, like, "We'll never be together because I live in the real world and you don't." He's like, "You mean I'm weak?" And she's like, "I didn't say that. You said that."
Yeah. Yeah, it's, like, a huge point of contention for them. And probably he's having to work through those feelings. And that's what the book is a product of.
Yeah.
Is him working through those
feelings. So many
years later. Yeah. I have a little list of, like, themes that I noticed. So, fiction versus reality.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, a big one is fiction versus reality because Susan gets so engrossed in the book.
She gets confused with...
She gets confused with reality. Whenever she sees the apparition in her employee's phone.
Okay. Not only that, but, like, she already doesn't sleep very much.
Yeah.
And, like... He clearly wrote the book to be, like, a metaphor for their relationship, mm-hmm. but for her, it's like, "Oh, he misses me so much, like,
yeah.
I didn't realize, like, we could still be in love, like, he's gonna be successful, you, like, work through it," and it's like, that's not at all what this is about.
No, not at all. And she's completely taking that fiction in the wrong way.
Yeah.
And she seems to be getting confused between fiction and reality. And like you said, whenever she told him, I live in the real world and you don't. And she keeps saying, I'm a realist.
Even though it's like, and he's like, "No, you don't live in the real world."
Yeah. So the fiction versus reality is really intense. And also, like, I guess I kind of want to talk about, so their idea of revenge in the book is that he gets revenge on the man who killed her. Killed his wife and daughter.
Yeah, and he shoots him.
And then he accidentally shoots himself.
Yeah. He goes blind
mm-hmm.
Because of he gets hit in the head with, like, a tire iron or something like that. And he goes blind, and he's stumbling out, and he killed the guy. And he's stumbling out, and he's trying to call for help. And so he shoots the gun to try and call for help, and then he trips and shoots himself in the stomach.
Yeah.
And I also thought that was interesting because, like, the stomach is such an interesting place
to
shoot yourself. Like, especially when a really big thing was, like, the abortion.
Exactly.
And, like, I don't know if that was just accidental or if it was on purpose, but I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
The abortion almost, like, slides by in this movie,
honestly. It does.
Because you see her daughter, who seems like she would be the right age
to be Edward's daughter.
And then when you find out... Her husband's like, "Oh, it's okay. Like, I'm glad you did it."
She aborted Edward's kid.
So you find out that, like, oh, that's not
Edward's That's Armie kid. Hammer's
kid. And I thought
I thought it was Edward's kid.
And I almost thought she didn't have the abortion. I thought maybe she was going to have it and then didn't have it and then lied to him or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he says, "I'm glad you did it."
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, she did do it."
She did do it, yeah. Yeah, the abortion does kind of really slide by, doesn't it?
It's almost like, did it happen or not? And I feel like if it wasn't for the book, it would be like...
Yeah, like, obviously, because the kid is in there and the kid gets taken away from him, so that's how he feels about... but in the book, like, the idea of revenge is him getting revenge on the men, but in the reality, the idea of revenge is him standing her up.
Exactly, him getting revenge on her. Well, and the whole thing is the revenge. He sends her the really... He writes a book about her. He sends it to her.
He
emails her. It seems like, "Oh, I blame him, not you."
Yeah.
Even though, like, clearly it's her fault.
Yeah.
He sends it to her, and she reads it, and it's like he knows that she's so, like, selfish.
Yes.
That she'll think.
And she's so shallow.
It's like that you're so vain, you probably think
the song is about you. That's what this movie is.
So it's like.
They should have played that during the credits.
They should have. And you're so he.
So vain.
He, that's about Dave Coulier.
Really?
The guy that played Uncle Joey. Yeah. In Full House.
That's funny.
Yep. But he, so like, he sends that to her. He says, like, she's like, I loved your book so much. It was so poignant. Like, I'd love to take you out to dinner. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, of course. And then.
Tell me when and where. And then she goes to the restaurant and he never shows up.
He never shows up.
And that's revenge.
Exactly. And it's not only that, but it's like this idea of like, you thought after all this time, you thought I was still weak enough that I would just come running back to you the minute you said. And she has that thing at the very beginning when she's talking to her husband or whatever. And she's like, it's sad he never remarried. Like, he never got over me.
She's like, pities him.
She says, like, he never got over me.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's wrong with you?
She is so entitled.
Exactly. And I read something, I don't know if I...
And it's like pointing out, like, you're the one who has been enticed by me. Like, I so easily got to you.
Yeah.
Like, so, you're the one who's not over me.
Let me know? Find. So, the thing that's interesting about it is Susan, again, like with the fantasy versus reality thing, Susan constantly talks about how she lives in like the real world, but in reality, she lives in like this fantasy.
Yes.
She's such a pessimist. She hates her life. She thinks like, oh, like she says to her husband, like, oh, I know your business isn't going good. Like, don't worry. I'll put a new painting in a gallery this week and we'll make enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, first of all, why would you say that to your husband? That's such a mean thing to say. But especially if he is like trying to work hard and she thinks like, oh, I take care of him. He needs me. And then he cheats on her and she hears it.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, he doesn't need me. But then you get the book from Edward. It's like, she has this fantasy where Edward never got over her.
And that he's going to sweep back in and, like, steal her away because he's changed. He's stronger now.
Exactly. And I read this article on Colossus.com or FilmColossus.com.
I read that one, too.
Yeah, and she says, without Edward, she has no one. At least before he reached out to her, she could think to herself that no matter how bad things were, at least there was one person out there who desired her. And with that context, Edward not showing up is really brutal. It's not the physical act of vengeance that most of us crave that we get in the book. It's the diabolical mental and spiritual fatality. The I'm going to take away every last bit of hope you have and leave you with absolutely nothing. Fuck you. And then basically it's like he does that to be like, you have had this fantasy that, and also it's like the book was his catharsis. It was him getting over that relationship.
Yeah, and him.
Which is why he sent it to her.
Yeah.
But to her, it's like him asking for her back.
Exactly. And it's
two completely different.
And that's just her like entitlement coming out really. Like that's just, it's all about her being shallow and entitled.
Well, not only that, but it's sad because she lives like in this fantasy world where it's like, well, maybe my life sucks, but at least Edward still loves me and he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And we know from like her flashback, she obviously thinks of Edward as a nice person.
As a nice person. And he obviously is a nice guy.
And it's like, she's known him for forever and he's always been in love with her. And so it's like, she thinks like, oh, that love will never go away. Like that's forever.
Yeah.
And he says, I think it's really interesting. He says that line to her when they're breaking up for the last time.
He's like, when you love someone, you don't just throw it away.
Yeah. And he says, you don't throw it away because you may never get it back. And she does throw it away and she thinks, well, I can always get it back.
Yeah.
And he says, if you throw it away, it's gone.
Yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah.
And he stands her up.
Go Edward
on Go that. I mean, truly. But then also there's like an interesting thought that I read in that same article where people said like, well, she's not hurt. Maybe she is hurt, but there's like, it's, some people see it as like a really sad, brutal ending. Like she's got nothing now.
Mm-hmm.
But some people see it as kind of like a hopeful ending for her.
I can see that.
And
like,
in fact, Tom Ford said that he felt like it was a hopeful ending.
Really?
Yeah, because, let me find this.
I can see that, though, definitely, how it could be hopeful for, like, her getting over her own entitlement.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, someone needs to call you out.
Yeah, and somebody basically says, like, what's interesting about, like, Susan is all she ever wanted for him was for him to become strong. Mm-hmm. And he finally did. He became strong enough that he finally felt like he could stand up to her.
Yeah.
And it's like that for her has to be like kind of good.
Yeah.
Like to know that you wanted him to become stronger and in the end it was you that made him stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
And you made him a good writer.
You made him. Yeah. And you made him a good writer.
That breakup made him write this gritty, incredible crime drama.
Exactly. And it's like.
And the book is captivating.
I think what's also interesting about her is they talk so much about how, like, oh, she could be an artist, she could be an artist, but she can't get in touch with her own emotions.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, like, Edward's ability to get in touch with his emotions is what allows him to get over the relationship. And her inability to get in touch with her emotions is why she can't get over it.
Yeah.
And it's like he got the catharsis out of creating art, and she could have it too. If she would just create if she would just do what he always said she should do.
And the thing that she disdained about him was, like, his sensitivity. And if she would just, like, have some of that,
yeah,
then she could get over the relationship.
Exactly. But it's also interesting because I don't think really she'll be affected that much by it. Like,
yeah.
She's always been this way. She's always been really closed off. She's always been an insomniac. She's always, like, not been able to connect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, probably she's just going to keep going through her life like this.
Yeah.
And if it's not this fantasy, it'll be something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
If, like, Edward hurts, probably. I really see more of the revenge than I do of, like, the hope, at least for her.
Yeah.
For Edward, it's good.
Yeah.
But for her, I just have a hard time, other than maybe her feeling, like, satisfied that Edward finally was able to stand up to her.
Yeah, but I feel like she will only come to that realization later.
Yeah. Definitely not at the end of the movie when he stands her up.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I wrote down that weakness and power is a big thing. We talked about that, about how much power Susan had over him. Because that scene where he gives her the thing to read and she's like, well, like, I don't, like, you know, kind of saying, what do you want me to say? And he's like, I just wanted you to like it.
Yeah, and she's like, well, like, why do you give it to me, like, if you don't want my opinion? And...
Ugh.
She's like, this is why I hate reading your shit.
Oh.
Which is such a mean thing to say.
It's so mean.
And then, also, like, just, I don't know, in the book, too, there's, like, this whole, he can't save them. Mm-hmm. He tries literally everything, can't save them. Then they find him. Well, they can't get him in court. Like, it's this constant, like, weakness, power, and then only at the very end do we have, like, any subversion of power.
Mm-hmm.
Between him and Ray. That scene where he's taking his shit.
Oh my god. You know? Yeah.
Amazing.
Amazing.
He's wiping his butt with a page of the script.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny. I read that somewhere. That's so funny.
I read that multiple places, but I read it somewhere.
That's funny.
I know.
I really want the acting is really good.
Oh, it's really good.
It's really good. And not only on the part of Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Shannon as the cop is really good. And the guy,
Aaron Taylor Johnson,
who played Ray, was
amazing.
I think it's interesting because Michael Shannon got nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, and Aaron Taylor Johnson won a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, but he wasn't nominated for an Oscar.
No, I know. Isn't that weird?
Did you know Tom Ford personally groomed Aaron Taylor's facial hair?
Mm-hmm.
For Ray?
I did. I did know that.
Funny.
So funny. Yeah, I think that this movie, I think it's really good. I think that it's a really interesting concept, and I think that it is misleadingly dense.
Yeah, because really not that much is happening in it.
No.
There's only three storylines. It's like, in the past, all of those things are just like, it's like the last 5 years in you, where it's like, we're just getting little snippets of their relationship, baby, to show you that, like, it used to be good, but it's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got present day, which literally only takes place in, like, 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally, like, a weekend. Where she reads the book, And then the actual plot of the book, which is in, they're all in chronological order, too.
Yeah.
Nothing's not in order.
Yeah.
So, it's like if you, I feel like people think it's more dense than it is because of the breaks between stories.
Yeah.
And because some of the stuff happens so fast that you're kind of like, why is that in there? Mm-hmm. I guess, like, pretty much all of the present day stuff where it's her, it like goes by so fast, it's like not even important.
Yeah.
Hardly.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just her living her life yeah. and you're seeing that it's not very fulfilling.
That's basically it. Basically, yeah. her entire. Ah! Whoops. Do we need a towel?
Yes.
Okay. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
We're back.
We're back. I spilled some wine.
It's okay. We got clean. It didn't take long.
It didn't take long. All right. Where were we?
Whoa.
So yeah, themes. We talked about fiction versus reality, revenge, weakness, and power. And then just the shallowness of Susan and how easily she is, like, her mind has changed.
Yeah.
You know, how easily she, the way that she thought about Edward, how she could just, like, get him at any time is how, is what Edward is doing to her.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's coming back and is like, look at how easily I could get you back.
Exactly. And it's like, you broke up with me. You haven't seen me in 19 years. I mean, she said...
And you have the audacity to sign Love, Susan at your in your email.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but she's tried to call him in the past, like, mm-hmm. and he's, like, ignored her. Also, it's like, you aborted my child.
Without telling me,
like...
And
also, for all he knew, it was, like, it wasn't over for sure.
Yeah.
It was just, like...
And she was cheating on him.
Yeah. It's, like, all this... And you still think that I would just waltz back into your life
mm-hmm.
the minute you wanted me to. And he's like, and look how easy. Like, and also, I think he realizes she's unhappy with her life.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's pretty crazy.
It is.
Pretty sad.
It is a sad movie. There's a really pretty graphic rape scene, which is really intense.
Yeah.
I watched it with my boyfriend, and he did not like this movie.
Yeah, that... I think the most compelling part is certainly the story, the novel.
I agree. I think that the scene where they're, like, intimidating them in the car is so...
So terrifying.
So scary. Like, it's, like, scary, scary.
I know.
Like, it's like, this could happen.
Yeah, it really could, and it's, like
the entire novel is terrifying.
Yeah, because it... Until the part where they start, like, tracking them down with yeah. the cop, all of that could really happen.
Yeah.
All of it. Like... So, and also, like, they said, like, they didn't mean to kill them.
No.
They just got too aggressive, and he even said, like, probably they hit her with a baseball bat to make her stop talking, and it only took one hit, and she died.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't mean to kill him, but once you kill him, once you've killed one, you have to kill the other one.
Exactly.
Also, I think it's so, how they could just say, like, no, don't know what you're talking about.
I know.
So insane.
So insane how, like, the two men who, whenever they're face-to-face with Tony.
Can just lie.
Can just say, I don't know.
I'm sorry about your wife, but I don't know what that is. And you're like, wow, can you lie like that?
Yeah, we all know that it's you.
I know, and it's, like, never a question for you because you know you've seen it.
Yeah.
But also when they think he did it for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But...
Ooh, and the scene where they find the bodies is really, really upsetting.
So sad.
It's interesting how his wife in the book had her eye, like, knocked out, and he had his eye knocked out in the end.
Mm-hmm. It's just really sad. I mean, he dies in the same place as them, too.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. It's just really, like, depressing, too, because he thinks, like, oh, if I had not run away, like, if I had not, like, walked along the highway till I found that house, I could have saved them, but... They were coming back to get him, and they were already dead.
They already had the bodies.
Yeah, which is why they came back to try and get him.
Yeah, because they killed them.
Exactly, and they were going to kill him.
Yeah.
So that they'd never be found out. Aww, it's so sad. That is so scary.
It's terrifying. The whole, oh my god, I kept imagining myself in the place of, like, Isla Fisher.
And what would you do? Because...
Your tire's flat. You don't know, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's like... There's no cell service. They are trying to outrun them, and they can't. And that stuff really does happen. People really do, like, run people off the road. And I always think about, like, people go crazy when they have road rage.
Yeah.
And those people have never killed anybody else. Ever.
No.
It was just, like, this one-off freak thing where they got really pissed and they...
Got too aggressive,
and then they're dead, and then you've got to kill everybody. And also, they clearly didn't feel bad because one of them had already raped people before.
Yeah.
But also, like...
They'd never killed before,
and they clearly didn't feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because, especially at the end when they're like, fuck you, like, I'm glad I killed your wife, like, all this mm-hmm. stuff. It's like, clearly they're not good people.
No.
But, I don't think
they went out that night and was like, I'm going to murder some people. I don't think they did either.
I think it's just, like, opportunity presented itself.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so fucked.
It's so scary.
And that, like, kind of... And the whole reason they start chasing them is because they're passing them and she gives them the finger.
Yeah.
The whole reason. Because they are passing him because he's going too slow. Or they want to go faster.
Mm-hmm. And then they're screaming at him, and India, the daughter, gives them the finger.
Yep. And they are like... Okay, well, now that's it.
Yeah.
That shit really does happen.
It's true.
People wrote, like, do you remember that a couple years ago, like, maybe a year or two ago in, like, a town 30 minutes from here? There was this guy who was driving, and this other guy cut him off.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, like, giving him the finger, and so the guy that cut him off pulled over. And the guy that got cut off pulled over, and they were, like, arguing, and they both went back to get in their cars, and the guy that cut him off pulled out a gun and shot the guy in the back of the head.
Oh, my God.
Literally, yeah, just killed him. Literally killed him. Here. Like,
because he
got cut off.
Yeah, it happens.
It wasn't even him that got cut off. He was the one that cut the guy off. And he got pissed that the guy got mad at him and gave him the finger, and they got into an argument, and he fucking shot him in the face. Literally point blank. And the guy was, like, turned around, leaving.
Ugh.
And then, not that long ago, too, like, this was probably last year, there was a guy who was, he honked at the guy because he was doing something stupid, and the guy freaking shot into his car and killed his little daughter, who was, like, 6 years old in the backseat. Literally just shot into his car, and it was, like, his daughter was in there, and she got killed. What happens in people's minds? Mm-hmm. They just lose it.
Yeah.
It's like, they, like, black out rage or something.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that is. Like, what is it that makes us do that?
About road rage.
Like, what is it that... Because when you're just walking and somebody's in front of you and they're going slow, you don't, like, black out in anger.
Yeah.
It's, like, specifically...
When
we're behind a wheel.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, like, a power thing that we feel like we're safe in this little, like, bubble and, like, mm-hmm. nothing could hurt us. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I don't know, it's like, it's just, road rage is so much more severe. You don't get, like, you might get annoyed that someone's, like, walking slow in front of you, but you don't get, like, so mad you, like, beat them in the head with a rock.
Exactly, and road rage, they literally kill people.
And, like, that one guy where he, like, shot him, he just, like, the argument was over. He was done with the argument. They had pulled off. It had been minutes since that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he still got out a gun. And shot him in the back of the head on purpose. It wasn't like, oh, in the heat of the moment we were fighting and I punched him in the face and he died. Or he fell and he hit his head and broke his neck. Like, that stuff happens too, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, accidental deaths, like manslaughter. That was murder.
Yeah.
That was, like, passionate murder. It's, like, the kind of thing that happens when you, like, walk in and see your girlfriend, like, in bed with another man. Where people, like, black out and they just, like, kill them.
Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah. That stuff happens. Like, it's like, but road rage is like, that's not the ultimate betrayal. It's just someone like.
It's just a literal stranger on the road.
No, that's why whenever people are like, I'm going to honk at this car, I'm like, literally don't.
I only honk at cars if they're like about to run into me.
Me too,
and
that's
I'm
the
like,
only
I'm
time.
Just trying to get their attention.
Me too. That's the only time I ever do it.
Yeah.
Is if someone's about to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
Never do I honk at a car if they're being annoying or they're doing something bad.
Yeah.
Ever.
Oof.
I know, because I'm like, what if someone just fucking killed me? That could happen.
That could happen, yeah.
It does happen.
Jake Gyllenhaal's so fine.
Oh my lord.
Him with a beard.
Boy. Did you know Tom Ford was going to make a comedy before this film, but he revealed that it was so inappropriate that it's possible it will never be made. The film that he wrote that was a comedy. Which I just think is hilarious.
That's really funny. A fashion designer.
Tom Ford wrote a comedy so inappropriate that no studio will make it. And Seth
Rogen
got the interview made. But this comedy is so bad.
I know. I was just thinking about that. I'm like, have you heard of Seth Rogen?
Have you seen any comedies ever? There's so many so inappropriate comedies.
American Pie? That got made. That had a whole series.
I know. People love that shit. What is your, in your movie? Liam was telling me about this movie, and I looked into it. He kind of gave me misinformation, so I'll tell you the real information.
Okay.
So there's this movie called The Clown Who Cried, or The Day the Clown Cried, or something like that.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. Jerry Lewis was, he started it, and he wrote it. Well, he, like, adapted it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically about this, it's this 1974 film about this, Jewish clown who was imprisoned in Nazi concentration camps, who was used to help kill children, like we were killed children into gas chambers and kill them. And Jerry Lewis is in it. And Jerry Lewis is a slapstick comedian. He made like The Nutty Professor, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, Liam told me it was a comedy. And it's in the Library of Congress. It was donated in 2015. It will not be released until July of 2024.
Oh, dang.
So it was made in 1974, and it's never been released.
Oh, really?
Only a few people have ever seen it. And basically, he told me it was a comedy, but more accurately, it is meant to be a drama.
Uh-huh.
But Jerry Lewis basically said, it is so tone-deaf and horrible that he stopped it from ever being in theaters. And wow. He basically, when he donated it to the Library of Congress, he donated it with the stipulation that it would not be shown until after his death. Because he said he does not want to be alive when people see that.
Wow.
And he thinks it is, he said basically he's like so tone deaf he cannot handle it. He said it's the worst thing he's ever made.
Oh my God.
And that he just thinks it's like disgusting. From what I understand, basically it is dark. It's like really dark.
Yeah.
But there are like several scenes where the clown does like slapstick comedy and it's actually supposed to be humorous. Because he is a clown, but it just like doesn't fit in at all.
Gotcha.
And in the very end, he kills himself with the kids. He like gasses himself.
Dang.
I know. So I'll look forward to that in 2024.
Me too.
I'll be watching that when it comes out.
I will too.
I probably won't enjoy it at all.
No,
and
but
I'll probably be like cringe.
It's cultural though.
It is. I mean, it's like something so bad that a comedian went no.
Yeah.
Something so bad a comedian went, you can't show that.
You can't show that till I'm dead.
Till I'm way dead. He was never gonna, they were never gonna show it at all. I also was like, Library of Congress, what the fuck do y'all want with that?
Right?
But maybe it's like a history thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you have a review?
I do.
Is it bad?
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's long.
Cool.
So get ready.
Cool.
1 out of 10. This movie is like sex without orgasm. Do you love my title? Don't you love how I make a statement? Just like this piece of crap film thinks it does. I don't think the writer realized it was a movie, not an abstract painting. Movies have purpose. Movies have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Movies build to something and usually lead somewhere, but this pile of junk leads nowhere. Frustratingly nowhere. Hence the title of my review. It builds and builds and has no release, and it just ends abruptly if you want to call it an ending. So here's our leading lady, a cliche. She's a career woman married to a career man who's having an affair, which is not shocking at all. She was married once before, and her ex-husband, a novelist, sends her his book. Most of the movie is about the guy in the story whose wife and daughter were kidnapped and raped. He works for over a year with this detective to catch the murderers. Now, why the entire movie was not that story is way beyond me. I could give a crap less about how she left her novelist husband after aborting his child just to end up with a cheating husband. Who cares about that storyline since it had no point? That storyline ends with her being stood up in a restaurant drinking scotch. The end. Really? I also found out Tom Ford designs clothes. He should probably stick with that. And the beginning of the movie with fat, naked women dancing in slow motion was supposed to be some crap statement when really it was just uncomfortable to watch. As pointless as the film itself. The film creator is this man and the audience the woman in my mind. Having said that, the man is pleased. They made money, managed to get brilliant actors to do their crap film, and live happily in their mansions. I, the woman, or the audience, if you will, and left unsatisfied and $9 shorter. But hey, glad I could contribute to their yachts. And for those who like this junk and think I'm too dumb to grasp the metaphors, if that's what this movie thinks it is, one big metaphor for something, I urge you to see a film called Silent House. That film is full of metaphors and statements that work with the storyline and build to an actual finale. This is the worst film of the year, and I'm saying that in the year when the remake of Ghostbusters came out with a friggin' female cast. Oh, I guess that makes me sexist.
I mean, if that's what you didn't like about the movie, that does make you sexist. Yeah.
As well as the release of the ever-so-pointless sequel to Independence Day. But this film, absolutely terrible. Rubbish, as the Brits say. I wouldn't Netflix it. I wouldn't Redbox it. I wait for it to come on Lifetime if you really want to see it. That way you can take shots during the commercial breaks just to make it tolerable.
I understand their concerns, but I disagree.
Yeah, I don't think that... I think it's got a pretty satisfying ending.
I like it. I like the ending.
I think the ending at least makes you go like, what?
Yeah, and then you have to like think about it more and then you understand it.
The ending of the story is really good.
Oh my god, it is.
It's a very satisfying payoff. The only payoff that you don't really get is between her and Edward because... But it's because you're seeing it from Susan's perspective.
Exactly.
You should be left unsatisfied because Susan, she is left unsatisfied.
Because Susan is unsatisfied.
And it is all from her perspective. So the idea, you don't... If it was satisfying, how did Susan learn her lesson at all?
Exactly. Exactly.
She didn't.
Then the revenge thing doesn't work.
Yeah, and it's a whole movie about revenge, really.
Yep.
It's like every little bit of it.
Yep. I thought it was nice. I liked it.
I like it too. I mean, it's a good movie.
It was entertaining.
And it's got really good actors.
The acting is really
and
good.
It's really pretty.
It is beautiful.
I think it's especially for a guy's debut film.
Yeah.
Pretty freaking good, in my opinion.
Me too. What'd you give it?
Probably like an 8 out of 10.
Me too.
I like it.
I like it too. I think it's a... It
didn't like blow my mind. Like some people were like, this changed my life. It didn't really change my life.
No, me either.
But it's good.
It's good and I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah. And I'd show it to people. Yeah. I'd watch it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed watching it again.
I know. I love Jake Gyllenhaal.
I do too. He's so talented. So cute. And Amy Adams is always great. Michael Shannon was really good. Everyone was good.
Yeah, everyone was good. Everyone. And like, it's very, like, feels very real.
It does. It gets the job done. Like, it's scary.
Yeah. I was terrified.
Me too.
Real life scary is so much scarier than fake scary.
It's true. Like, this was one of the, like, realest scary thrillers I've seen in a minute.
Yeah. It's like... Only really the beginning is scary.
Yeah, because just...
After you find out they're dead, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Exactly, but like that entire scene is just terrifying.
It is so...
And that's how he starts the book.
I know, it's so suspenseful. But like, you really did become a good writer.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked it.
Well, next week, whose pick is it?
It's mine.
It'll be your pick.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cool, cool.
I watched The Witch today, but I kind of don't want to fight.
Next week will be our last... episode we recorded in this house together when we both still live together. I know. And then
the next one will be before you leave.
And then it's like, oh, we're gonna have to try Skype stuff. Oh yeah, get ready for that, guys. Jane and I are gonna have to figure out how to record from two different countries, so
we'll,
sorry if the next few episodes have some bumps.
Yeah, but we'll get it. We'll get it. She'll be there for a semester.
Yeah.
If we can figure out how to do it here, we can figure out
worst
how to do
comes
it.
To worst, like the next 20 episodes aren't very good.
Yeah, and we'll be doing this for a while. Listen, it took 8 years for the last podcast, guys, to get big. We have time.
We have 3 patrons.
Yeah.
3 people pay to listen to us talk.
It's true.
And you could be one of them.
And you could be one of them.
You could listen to us talk even more times a week. It's really a good deal, everyone. We're giving you some pretty sweet stuff.
It's true. You should donate.
You should donate. Come on. Why? What's stopping you?
Yeah.
Right now, we have enough money to see one new movie. If we go to Pittsburgh. We have enough money, and we don't get food. We have enough money to see one new movie a month.
Yep. And we're going to have to go see It Part 2. We're going to need money for that.
It's so true.
Because we're going to make an episode for you.
Exactly. And we're going to have to go to Springfield for that one.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have to go, like, to the Alamo Draft House
exactly.
For that.
That's one that we go spend money on.
Yep.
Because that's for us and for you.
It's true.
I really want to see Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready. What is it like? I don't know. I'm really curious.
All right, guys.
Some people probably wish we'd do other films. But,
eh.
We do this for fun.
We do this for fun, guys. Speaking of that, please donate to our Patreon, and then your suggestions will be bumped to the top of the list.
So true. Don't like the movies we do? Donate to our Patreon.
Yep.
Oh, well, maybe we'll do your movie. We will do your movie, not just maybe. Oh, we have so many good things. At least go check it out.
Yeah, just check it out, guys. Please.
Look, it's probably affordable.
Yeah.
What is it? Don't buy a coffee one day.
Yeah, it's $1.
What? If you don't buy a coffee one day, you've already donated to our podcast 3 times.
Yeah, and you get an entire month's worth of free of extra content.
Exactly. Like in the middle of your week.
In the Wednesdays, guys. Wednesdays. You don't have to wait till Sundays.
Exactly. You get it Sunday. Oh, you had time to listen to it. Maybe it took you a couple days because you were kind of busy. You'd listen to it on your commute. Guess what? You finish it. You're like, oh, now I don't have any more podcast time. Oh, wait. Yeah, you do because it's Wednesday, bitch. And it's on your Patreon feed.
Yep.
It's good. And those episodes usually are pretty long.
Yeah, they're usually like an hour or so. So we, you know, have a good time with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.